forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom in an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Care Hallenbeck. There is an African tradition of love songs so pure the listener cannot tell if the singer is singing of a lover or of God. In our own tradition of popular music, perhaps Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water would be among them, the loving singer pledging to dry all the tears of the beloved, as God promises in the New Testament. Peter Gabriel's In Your Eyes would be among them, the singer considering the lover's eyes as a doorway to a thousand churches. These are melodies that haunt the soul, lyrics I would sing to my husband or to my children to comfort them, words I would hope the angels would wrap around my own heart in my hour of need. Music has this ability to create a sacred bridge between our worldly hands and our most exalted visions, combining math and sound in a way that penetrates the whole of our brain, subduing any division. At its truest, music is both human and divine. We cannot resist. This from the book Saints in Love. Today we welcome to the program perhaps another artist to join the ranks of great singers and songwriters who entertain the ear while inspiring the heart and soul. An East Coast native, Maimon Johnson, is an award-winning singer, songwriter, and guitarist. She is also a woman of faith with a lot on her mind. She cut her teeth on old-time gospel spirituals, straight-ahead jazz, country blues, and classic rock and roll, establishing herself in the Detroit, Manhattan, Dublin, Cannes, Nashville, and Los Angeles music scenes. Maimon has toured in the U.S. and Europe, delivering a powerful and punchy mix of, quote, funky pulse poet potions she calls folk hop for hip folk. She has performed and toured with artists from Norah Jones to Nona Hendrix, from Sheila E. to Rufus Wainwright. CNN Music has touted Maimon to be one of the top 10 burgeoning songwriters to watch. And she joins us here today. Maimon, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us on the Institute.
Thank you, Kara. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, first, the role of faith is deeply important. Tell us a little about your own spiritual journey. Did it begin in childhood?
Well, actually, for me, it actually began before I was born, because both of my parents had a very strong Christian faith already established way before I was born, and I was the eighth of nine children, so I was born into a family already committed in lifestyle and efforts to a way of faith living.
And now is that different, though, in terms of how spirituality would have taken root in your own life as someone on a journey as well as a musician?
I believe so. Because as a child, I grew up in a Christian culture, and my parents had a very focused faith walk, their own personal walk with Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. And I, however, hadn't arrived at that personal walk with Christ until much later in life.
Uh-huh.
Although it was always around me. The first thing I ever read and memorized as a child was Psalms 23, and so I was a very young. I remember sitting around the dinner table, and the first book we ever read from was the Bible. And as we grew, we were permitted to explore and look and see what the world we were living in. But it was very, very, very foundational that a discipline and understanding the faith of what we believe in terms of Jesus Christ, and then making that own choice for ourselves as adults was presented to us. And I was much, much later than many people who grew up in a Christian house. And I think partially that is because of being eighth of nine children. I had a lot of leeway by the time I showed up to kind of explore and be a musician and be an artist. My parents were a lot less nervous with the eighth than they were with two.
I can relate to that.
Yeah. I'm like, those first seven, so let's see what happens with this one.
So you had a little more rope.
I did. I had quite a bit more rope, probably too much rope.
Well, you know, we can get a little too much rope sometimes. And, you know, it's interesting because just because you're necessarily raised in a tradition doesn't mean it becomes real for you until,
very true.
You know,
very
much later. I grew up in a family where my parents were of two different faiths and decided not to raise me as any faith and to let me sort of discover that and choose it for myself when I became an adult.
Wow.
So I can relate to faith and in adulthood,
yeah.
Which is a different experience, of course, from childhood in many ways. I think perhaps a lot of kids are sort of, you know, brought to church, you know, kind of forcefully, and might actually veer away from it.
As a result,
and that was not my experience. Faith, coming to faith in adulthood is a powerful thing. Now, can you share a little of that journey and how this spiritual path took root in your life?
Well, early on, my dad was a pastor and church planner, and my parents were both missionaries. My mom was a nurse, so she did a lot of work with bringing medical materials and to underprivileged areas of the United States. And so early on, I can almost remember most evenings I was in church and some sort of church function or worship. And on the weekends, I wouldn't be unlikely to be in church maybe two or three times, like a morning service and an evening service. And I remember it being so much a part of what we did, our family. And being something that I intensely enjoyed because it was community, the community of faith and a community of believers. And we really were blessed to have a practice of having that love not only in our church community but also in our home. So I really was blessed to have that example of our doors were always open. I mean, if you were in our neighborhood and you're hungry or you didn't have a place to stay, you knew that you could come to the Johnson House and we'd work something out. If you needed clothing or if you needed, my parents had started early on these centers called Love Centers where no questions asked, they would give it out food and clothing to anyone who came to their door or to their church. And so that was just a way of life that you didn't, we were taught early on that about community. So, and also having, again, nine kids, it's a community, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
So, there's one bathroom. You got to share it. So that was
sacred.
That was sacred. You know, I was on the morning team because we were the younger ones, so we were early, early morning. We took our bath at night, and the teenagers were earlier. So it was really interesting how we made things work. But that was such a foundation about what community means to me now and also becoming a person of faith as an adult. I have a real clear distinction of the power of community, also the dynamic of faith within a community, the agreement for my community of following Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. We have commitments, a covenant that we've made to God and a covenant we've made with each other. And so I think it's the most powerful relationship. I know it's the most powerful relationship I have in my life because I filter everything, try to filter all my relationships through that covenant of how I treat people, how I treat my family, how I treat people in a romantic sense, how I treat myself. You know, knowing that I belong to God and just my efforts belong to God, the things that come from me belong to God. So, and I'm just, I'm blessed to be a tenant, blessed to be a steward of what he's given me. So,
Thank you so much, Maimon, for that. And that's deeply meaningful, that it definitely goes beyond the parish experience and into the community. And, of course, the covenant or promise that we have. Really, that's where the sort of the rubber meets the road, as they say. Which is important in spirituality. Now, we're going to get into your music, of course, your wonderful music in this hour. But let's talk a little bit about your, like when you began playing music and singing, and the role that that faith may have played.
Oh, it's huge. I can distinctly remember being a little girl with my kid sister, who's 10 months younger than me, no longer a kid either, but we would have these little shiny patent leather shoes on, and we'd go for the evening service at church, and there would be worship going on, and the music would be so vibrant and so spirit-filled, our little feet would just click on the ground. We'd have this, and so we would put little thumbtacks on the bottom of our shoes so we could click them on the ground to the music. And,
like tap shoes.
Yeah. And our little legs are just moving around. And then, which is very distracting, so we used to get a little bit in trouble. Like, you guys behave, be still. And then early on, I had a lot of people singing around me. I had a lot of music around me. All of us children were required to take piano lessons because music was very, very important to my parents. Also, they wanted us to have a discipline of practice. In terms of studying, academics were very important, and piano music lessons were also a very good way to occupy little hands.
Right.
And we had a lot of little hands, so it kind of kept us occupied with music. And then in our household, it was important that my parents were very, very disciplined and adamant that you are what you eat. So if you listen to good music, you listen to reverent music, you listen to music that is feeding you positive things, is speaking to you about love, the love of God, the love of your brother, your sister, then that's what's going to come out of you. So they were very, very protective of our ears and what we heard. They were protective of what we saw. We weren't allowed to watch, like, scary movies or things that were going to give us bad dreams,
right?
You know, because they were very invested in us. Whatever is noble, whatever is pure, that
right. We
would have that safety in our development. And so that all became very much foundational in the music that I began writing early on. I think I wrote my first song when I was 5.
Oh, my.
And it was about friendship.
You
know? It was about friendship. And very, very clear... very clear direction. My parents were very clear about who they were hoping us to become in community and as people of faith. So,
Now,
very
of course,
intentional upbringing.
Even with such clear direction, a lot of times we don't follow that
path. Most of the time we don't.
Things get rocky before they get smooth.
yes.
You know, maybe we can share a little of that kind of journey in a little bit.
Absolutely.
But so you wrote your first song at 5.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start playing music, and how did you learn? Did someone teach you in the family?
It was kind of a combination thing. Excuse me. I'm drinking some tea. I think I'm going to hiccup. Excuse me.
Oh.
Sorry. it was a combination thing that I had all these siblings who were playing. My mother played piano. My dad was a wonderful songwriter. And I had a lot of older siblings who played. So we would learn things from them, but then they'd go off back to school or what have you, and then we would have our lessons as well. We took formal lessons. At that time in the school system, music lessons were just offered when you hit fourth grade, you picked your instrument. You know, you're a 7-year-old.
Right.
No, yeah, second grade. At second grade, you picked your instrument, and then you carried your little instrument home. And I remember distinctly that I wanted to play the cello, but we had a rule that if you couldn't carry it yourself, you had to pick an instrument that you could carry. Because, you know, we had a whole herd of kids, so I picked the viola. So I had piano and viola lessons until I...
That's great.
Yeah. I was like,
I
got to
be practical in these things. I know.
Very practical.
I know. My 9-year-old is talking about maybe playing the tuba.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's much bigger than she is.
The tuba is big, it's heavy, and it's fabulous.
Yeah.
It's big, and it's heavy.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Definitely makes a statement.
I guess you could sit down and play.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Or sit down on it.
Well, the thing about that, too, is that because I was also a marching band.
Oh, gosh.
So my dad would have, I'd practice, we had a big yard and big field, and we were in the country in Pennsylvania. So I had to practice outside. Because I played the flugelhorn.
Yeah, my gosh.
So that's
wow.
Something to consider if you do go with the tuba.
Uh-huh.
A place to practice that is going to be interesting.
That's funny. Now, so again, you've got the great background and introduction to music, and the whole family,
yes.
you know, is participating somehow. But, you know, there's also tremendous culture out there
yes.
around you. Who influenced you? Who
oh
were
goodness.
Your favorite artists? And you might say, you know, you can hear some of their music in what you're doing today.
Yes. Well, I have to go by genres then, because I think everything that I hear I'm influenced by. I'm not one of those people who says, I don't have anyone influence me. I hear conversations I'm influenced, because I hear mm-hmm. music, even the lyricalness of voices. You have a very lyrical voice. And I hear music in rhythms in nature, so I'm one of those weird, nerdy music people. But if I were to say specific artists, I'd have to say that I've always loved, in terms of rock and roll,
mm.
I've loved U2, was always a favorite. Always loved Radiohead,
mm.
those kind of big landscapes of music they would make. That type of epic kind of sounding, big sounds like Coldplay does, that sort of thing. That's more contemporary.
Right.
But then in terms of classic, Chopin was always my guy.
Mm.
I love the etudes. I love that the floweriness of the floral, the flattings, and a lot of Debussy. A lot of French classical piano players were. I think that's probably huge melodies and harmonies come from that prettiness and that emotiveness they would have. And then I spent a lot of time with country music because my dad and my mom were from the South. My dad was from Kentucky, and Mama is from Oklahoma. So I remember the Grand Ole Opry. From Dolly Parton to Hank Williams Sr. Really great tried and true country and bluegrass players and. Mm. And then I'd have to say, in terms of gospel,
yeah,
anywhere from Mahalia Jackson to Sam Cooke and the Soul Stirrers to Aretha Franklin and James Cleveland Choir, just so many wonderful people out there. And there's Jermaine Hawkins, the Winans, more contemporary people.
Yeah.
Switchfoot for the rock and roll Christian bands. I love Switchfoot. So there were always a Third Day, Jars of Clay. To say that, I've been really blessed to find in each genre. Some genres I struggle with punk music, but I'm sure there were some things that I actually was inspired by Iggy Pop's American Caesar when he did that, the catharticness of the effort in that music. But I'd have to say... right now, I've been listening to quite a bit of Bill Withers because of the grooves of the music and the social consciousness of his writings about in the times about war, poverty, the man, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that's great stuff.
Yeah, really great stuff. So.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, I mean, even loving and being influenced by so many artists, your sound is unique, we'll hear some in a little bit. But, you know, as you said, you know, both of us, like I wrote as a child my first poem about the same age, like 6 or 7 years old.
Yes.
But what I write as an adult, of course, is coming from a different place, often from a place of healing, and often because I've learned along the way I've broken my own heart.
Yes.
Made a lot of mistakes and learned.
Yes.
or you know, using the artistic craft to heal something.
Yes.
This is certainly true about music and how does music help you or help people to work through things?
On a very personal level, in terms of working, I have to have music is my prayer time. And I, even before I was committed follower of Jesus Christ, I had a sense in my Christian upbringing, even if I hadn't grown up as a Christian, I always had a sense that when I was doing music, it wasn't just doing music, I was having a conversation with something larger, bigger than myself, and also that this conversation was an invitation to other people to partake in. And I distinctly remember that I would... There were times, a couple times in my life before I became a Christian, that I'd broken my own heart in situations, and the only thing I could do was sing in order to work through that heartbreak or that disappointment. And then significantly, what brought me to a very clear and committed relationship with Jesus Christ was that I actually had one of those epic 3 weeks where I lost everything in my scope of desire. I lost a child, I lost a husband, I lost a career, all in, and a brother-in-law, all inside of 3 weeks. And I'd worked very, very hard to get to a certain point and thought, okay, it's happening now in my own strength. And when it was all gone and I'm holding, literally the sand is running through my fingers because I went to Vegas in the desert to find out the next steps of what would happen. The only thing that met me in that barren, dry place, the only thing that met me in that, you know, devastation was Christ. I mean, it was epic, and it was like sci-fi, where that the pain and the devastation was so beyond me that I literally had to be gathered together by His love and His peace and His forgiveness for breaking my own heart, for breaking other hearts, I think in terms of healing. One thing that I experience now as a believer, and I've been professing Christ as my Lord and Savior since 2003. I got baptized June 24th. Now I find that every single day I take an assessment of the beginning and end of my day, and I fall short. I don't think I've gotten it right yet. I don't have the best conversations I would have had with people. I don't sometimes have the best conversation with myself, but I have a reliance through my music and through my faith, which is expressed in my music, that I'm forgiven and that I have opportunity to do better the next day and that I don't have to strive for it, but Jesus has taken on all of my mistakes on the cross, and my faith in Him taking that debt on for me has given me a huge opportunity to just experience each day trying to do my best, trying to live my best, trying to sing my best, trying to defer my own center of my universe for the other people on this planet. And so that's been that healing of music from what I've been gifted to do helps me not only encourage myself, it helps me encourage others that this is not random, but there is a God who loves us, whose intentions for us are divine, and has an antidote for us through Jesus Christ for the hardships of this world, for the mistakes of our own heart and the mistakes against us, and that we can speak to Him oftentimes either through prayer, or we can speak to Him through our art. I have other friends who, they're not musicians, but they might be painters or dancers or whatever, and that's how they have their conversations with God.
Well, that's powerful, Maimon, and also a great sign of hope, because in a place of such grief and desolation, many might also give up or shut down in terms of the music or creativity as well, but you remained open to that, and it sounds like a vehicle to help you through and to keep, as you say, the prayer going, the conversation going. Now that said, it's remarkable because if you think about it, in the music industry, it can be perhaps a different culture to be within that. Has that been difficult for you, or a challenge to stay within the sort of arena where folks may not be quite on the same page?
That's a profound and revealing question, because as things happened, for what brought me to a committed relationship with Christ was that I just gotten signed to a major label and started my first major tour when all, quote-unquote, hell broke loose. And I had to reassess my role in the music business, what I had compromised, what I had put as a priority, what I had made important to me other than music, the sacredity of music and its real tool, which is to converse with God and also to heal and to encourage us through worship to be healed. And I gotten so far off of that that I literally was lost in the industry. I lost my identity as a person, as a woman, as an artist, and was just all over the map. And so in many ways, by grace of God, the tragedy, which I became beauty from ashes, the tragedy that I opened myself up to, when I surrendered and said, this is too big for me, this is too big of a mess, it took literally 9 years for me to have 9 years of committing myself to worshiping church, teaching other people to write songs, to perform, really focusing on getting it not about me, so I could see and restore, be restored in what it's really about. Mm. And so now I'm coming. This will be, I'm really a new creature in the music. And the Bible talks about you're a new creature in Christ. Right. I'm a new creature in the music. I was even saying to the producer that's going to do this record yesterday, I said, I wonder if I should change my name because I'm not the same person that was here before.
Huh.
You know, and he's like, no, you don't need to change your name.
Right.
But it was because my name means the faithful one.
But, well.
But the fantastic thing about it is that it wasn't based on my faithfulness. It was based on Jesus' faithfulness to me.
But, you know, it's something with the story you're sharing. It's like a movie. You know, the person who finally got what they wanted and made all those steps to get that contract with the label, you know, all through all that ambition and finally got there and realized perhaps what had been compromised along the way. And then that's setting you off on your journey. To lead you where you are now, it's really great to hear about. Now, you mentioned songwriting a moment ago, and I just wanted to ask you, you know, it must be great and a lot of fun to perform around the world, but I imagine songwriting is a little different. What happens when you connect with that inner place when you write a song? Where is that coming from?
Well, you know, songwriting is an interesting kind of thing because I have two great joys in reference to songwriting. When I get a sense of a seed of a song, and it could germinate for a couple years, it could germinate for 2 minutes. The other thing that is the most exciting thing for me is when I am able to help someone else find their way of writing songs, their own psalms, if you will, if they're a believer, and if they're not, just to give them access to the creative process. So for me, it really comes from all kinds of, their sources come from all kinds of places. Like I said, it could be the washing machine rhythm, it could be some random conversation in a coffee shop, or it could be someone else's work or someone's voice that makes me want to write. But from the inner place, I have to say that it really, with such clarity and such assertion and confidence, I know that it's a gift from God to be able to write music and to be able to translate emotions and stories into a succinct little tiny package that you can share, a little present for other people. Here you go, here's a song.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is, it's not to, and there was a time in my life where I'd say, ooh, that's so squishy-wishy, but really, it really, when you're open to being creative, like for example, I was listening to a pastor talking the other day, and he was talking about how God, Elohim, is the creator in the Bible. When we're referenced to saints who believe in him, we're little e Elohim, and we're made in his image to be creative. And when I experience being creative, I'm experience the way that I've been designed to be, to mimic my God in heaven, my Father in heaven. And kind of like fruit don't fall far from the tree. My dad used to always say that.
Yeah.
You know, that he's the vine dresser, and I'm the fruit, and that I get to make fruit too, to share too.
Because oh my gosh,
mimicking,
yeah.
I'm mimicking the Creator because I want to walk like him, I want to talk like him, I want to think like him, I want to love that deeply. And of course, I'm only human, so I can't achieve that. But that's the example we're given through the fact that we are made in God's image. And so the creative thing, I truly believe that every single breathing human being is creative. There is not a single person on the planet who doesn't have that access to it, because we're all given a measure of faith. So for me, I really am so grateful to have been exposed to teaching through the Bible and through really, really amazing theologians who have really helped me see not only the blessing of being creative, but the responsibility. It wasn't just given to me to be sitting on it and having a good time. I was blessed to be a blessing. So when I write a song, I literally am sensitive to it being gifted to me and given to me. And I try to get it right. There are songs that I still have to tweak around because I'm not sure, and I have to sit on them, and they get revealed to me. And, you know, I'm only I can only take credit for the editing, is what I'm saying.
Right, right. Well, I'm glad you bring up about gifts and blessings, because we're about to share in one of them. We're about halfway through the program, Maimon. I'm just going to take a quick break here. Please stay on the line. You are listening to the Godspeed Institute live on the Progressive Radio Network. When we return from the break, we'll continue our conversation on music and faith with singer-songwriter Maimon Johnson. Let's spend a couple of minutes now with one of her songs. Stay with us.
Venus wipes the eyes of a man who is crying. Mars is afraid for the first time in his life. He is flying. Oh, the world is crazy, but
welcome back to the Godspeed Institute. You are live with CARE, and we're talking about music and the Christian faith with award-winning singer-songwriter Maimon Johnson, and that was a treat, part of what we just heard there. Brought a tear to my eye listening to it. Maimon, can you share a little of what that song is about?
Thank you, CARE, for that. That song is one of those, it's interesting, that song is about, I'd read Gary Chapman's Venus and Mars, and Five Love Languages, and about how men are from Mars and women are from Venus, and he's also actually a Christian as well, and he was talking about the differences between men and women, and I, at the time, could have been written a book myself on the differences between men and women, which would not have been as gracious as his. But I was just about at a point of breaking up with someone, and we were at a restaurant in New York, and that song came to me like in 10 minutes onto a napkin. It was one of those, the only time that's ever happened to me in hundreds of songs, that a complete picture of the, just a complete different perspective that two people could have about a situation. And although in that particular song, Mars does die because of his poor focus, priorities, choices, and Venus is left hanging the bag, holding the bag, basically. That's definitely from my being that I'm a woman. I picked her to be the one left alive. But it, in the end of the song, it talks about, the next verse talks about how they, when they both give up their lives or their stories of what they thought the other should be or shouldn't be, they were able to dance together because of grace, because of the amazing, their love was insufficient for each other, but the love that was offered to them through grace is sufficient to bring them together, that brings them back together.
Mm.
And so the last line is, ain't grace amazing, and Venus dances with Mars. And so it was definitely a song, although that gentleman and I did not get back together, in the song, the couple gets back together and they dance together through grace. And so that's what
it's just, it's just beautiful and and haunting.
And I thought of it, I was thinking of Willie Nelson and Emmy Lou Harris when I was thinking about sitting there at a dinner. I was like, who would I want to write a country song for? And I was just thinking, if those two ever sang together a song of mine, what would I write for them? And that's what I thought about. So.
Well, it's just beautiful. Now, in this part of the program, I would like to focus on the L word, love, and relationships, and a project that you're working on.
Yes.
Could you share some about your new project you'd like perhaps some help with?
Yes, absolutely. On July 1st, I'm going to launch my first Kickstarter project. I've decided to make an independent record after a long time. It's been 9 years.
Oh, you're not going back to the major labels?
I'm not saying I wouldn't. I'm just saying I don't know if it would be. I just don't know. I can't imagine that.
Mm.
And I don't know if I need to, but I know that I need to make music. So I'm just going to one foot before the other. I would say that I would definitely need to be with whomever that honors my faith and my who I am and helps me continue to honor that, like that Christ comes first in my life and in my music. So,
Now, can you just tell listeners who may not be aware, what is Kickstarter?
Oh, Kickstarter is really cool stuff. Kickstarter.com is a online community of creative folks who decided, hey, you know, everyone's creative, but everyone may need, not everyone can fund their project. So what if we created a community that was about creative people funding creative people? So through them, you can propose a project. My project is called Love Colored Glasses, and they approve it. And then you have to come up with rewards. So if, say, if someone were to financially support your project with a dollar, or it could be a dollar or $100,000, whatever, you would have to commit to giving them something back. And the more creative you get with the project, the more creative you get with giving the rewards back to people, the more success you have.
Hmm.
Now, they do require that when you make a proposal that you think it through,
right,
and you come up with a budget of how much you'll need to do your project, and then you also have a deadline. You can do anything from one day to 60 days. But at this, on the last day, the deadline, you have to raise exactly or more of what you propose, or you get nothing and everything is returned.
Okay.
Yeah, and the reason they do that is accountability, integrity. They don't want any projects going out there underfunded because
right,
they'll fail. And they also want, it has to be that you also can't fund yourself. You can't you can't put your own money into the project.
Right.
They really want it to be an affirmation from your creative community saying, we get what you're trying to do. So for me, my Kickstarter is called Love Colored Glasses. That's also the title of the upcoming new record.
And what is that about?
Well, a friend of mine, I was on his another, he does a morning radio show at a local, just public radio thing here where I live in Rockland, Maine. And we were just talking, and he said, you know, I try to look at things through love-colored glasses. And I thought to myself, I was like, wow, that is a fantastic title for a song. And so I sat on that, and Steve was talking about how just looking at situations personal and just to consider the other's perspective. And even if you disagree, agree to maintain each other's dignity, agree to maintain each other's integrity, and discuss the disagreement to the point of understanding or agreeing to disagree, but not to compromise the love. And that's actually, it's interesting because even this morning I was listening to this theologian, Robbie Zacharias, talking about the very same thing, so it's kind of a round picture here. But that's what that title's about. And what I'd like to do with the record, and as far as Kickstarter is concerned, it's to raise the funds, is I would like to go to people's homes and cook some dinner for them and their 20 friends and then do a concert for them in their homes. And the reasoning behind that is that I love to cook, and I love to cook for people. I love to entertain. And I also love the intimacy of being in a home. Mm. And I've lived in Maine for 5 years now, and before that I was in L.A. for 6 years and in New York. And I haven't had a family of my own or home in a long, long, long time. And so I really enjoy going into people's homes, and I also enjoy bringing music and food. So it's kind of a way to invite myself to dinner.
Yes, yes. And share.
Yes.
I know, and that's great. Locally, I'm sure for our folks around the world who are listening, I'm sure they could go and donate $1 or $100,000, as you said, to the project at Kickstarter.com. But you're talking about love and relationships, and not Xing each other out just because there's a speed bump or a difference.
Yes.
And that sounds really important. In general, and a real pattern for growth. I mean, look, this is wedding season, right? Let's be real now, right, gals here. You know, people can gain or lose faith in their relationships depending on what takes place in their relationship.
Yes.
And is that the kind of spirituality that can carry us over the long haul?
Mm.
Or should we aim for something else?
I think we have to aim for something else because we are designed for community and love, but we also, in my faith, we believe that we live in a fallen world, that there is a different agenda other than God's agenda, which is the agenda that is opposite of love, which is power, avarice, greed, violence, murder, all those things that we could call Satan, if we will, because I believe that there is such a being, and those are the heralds of that sort of thing. So, if we have an opportunity to mimic our Creator in terms of loving each other and loving ourselves, but at the same time, we have to acknowledge that we can only just do that mimic. We are not gods ourselves. So our love is limited. We can attempt unconditional love, but we have to work at it, and we will fail at it. But it's the attempting to do it that's important, the getting up from it. So in doing that, keeping our eyes fixed on the originator of love, the perfecter of love, which is God, helps us to understand that we do of what we're aiming for, because it is bigger than us, and also the other piece of that is grace, that we're offered. It's not something that we do in ourselves, that this love that we've been given from our Creator is a gift. So in mimicking Him, when we give love to someone else, we're gifting it to it. We're not doing it to receive something back. And that's the catch, because
right,
we want something back. But there's a freedom and it's difficult to do, to love without agenda, without expecting reciprocity in that air of coming back. That's our hope. And if we strive to love from a place of, I'm going to give love despite the situation, if everyone were able to do that, then, of course, we wouldn't need a Savior. But because we are not able to do that, that's when we have to look to a higher, bigger opportunity, which is to our faith in God, my faith in Jesus Christ, because that's how I learn to love. And that love is based on, I believe, and this is what the Bible talks about, forgiveness.
Yeah.
So you can't love if you're not willing to forgive, because people are going to make mistakes, and we're going to make mistakes, and it's an impossibility to hope anything other than that, and to be willing to come back to the table and say, and forgiveness is not easy. Sometimes it takes a long time.
Yes, and also what you said earlier about letting go of outcomes or agendas, I think it's very important, if in a God-centered relationship, when people come together, to have that center shifts the axis to something larger than yourselves. And, you know, it's important to allow ourselves to surrender and be recreated as a union, as a unified couple, which will be a different entity than who we were as single people.
Yes.
And I think often in our culture, we have a tendency to want to hold on to who we were or are as a single person in small and large ways.
Yes.
In a relationship. And it may not, you know, it might not kill the relationship, but then again, it may not allow it to bloom as fully as if we really give ourselves over to be remade.
Yes. So true, Kara, because if you just doing the math, if you put a plant in the garden in half, the plant says it needs full sunlight, but if half of it's shaded, it still may grow. It still may even bear fruit. But I guarantee you, the half that's in the sun is going to blow your mind. It's going to have big, juicy produce. And that's exactly what happens, I think, in a relationship. When people can settle for, okay, I'm in a relationship, but I'm going to maintain my autonomy, and it may work, but they are missing out on the blessing of becoming something new together.
Right.
You know?
Now, is this the kind of journey that your project Love Colored Glasses takes about relationships?
It does.
Or love?
It takes it about relationship. It also takes it about community, because romance, my favorite romance, I have to say, probably would be to have a partner, you know, to be married and have a husband. But there's also other romances. There's romances between you and your child.
Right.
There's romances between your siblings. There's romance between your neighbor. There's romance in your community. And that we can invite each other into a safe place, a safe clearing, to be different, to even disagree, but not to compromise dignity, integrity, and love. And because Christ always spoke the truth, and he never humiliated. He didn't humiliate people. He didn't in terms of like mocking them.
Right.
Being humbled is completely different from being humiliated. And instead, he raised us up into this encouraged place, in this place saying, you know what, abide in me, receive me. And so the Love Colored Glasses is very, very much so love songs. Now, they're even in my mind, sometimes I feel like the songs I'm singing are songs I can think there's a romantic person who's dear to me, that when I sing that particular song, that sometimes they're on my heart, but... And with great intentionality, the songs are also, that very same song is about either how God has loved me so well, you know, that the kind of love that I would love to exchange with a person, I know that God's already given that to me. So they're love songs, and they're also God songs.
Mm, yes, that's great. And, you know, on this program, which is so diverse in terms of religious experience around the world, you know, we hear... about love and relationships through many different, you know, facets, say, of the jewel of faith on the planet. But in this particular tradition, in the Christian tradition, Jesus is someone who in Scripture raises up marriage.
Yes.
And says this is a spiritual union.
Yes.
We can't just shrug people off.
Yes.
And just divorce here or there.
Yes.
Just on a whim.
It's changing your shoes.
What's that?
It's not like changing your shoes.
Right, right. And so there's a, you know, there's some direction there about looking at this in a different light. And that can involve many things. How does this come across in your music? How do you share this sort of life, death, resurrection nature that takes place in relationships?
Well, I think it comes across in a few ways. In the lyrics themselves, there's intentionality in trying to my discipline in writing in terms of study is to tell a story, to take a concisely little 3 to 4 minute story there, to take us from the beginning to the problem to the climax to the resolution. And so in the songs we do that lyrically, and then the lyrics also help us make choices about the actual music, the melody, because certain words lend themselves to certain ways of singing within a certain body. So my body is an instrument. When I'm singing, I sing certain words a certain way that other people may not sing that particular way because their instrument is different.
Right.
But that word itself, like poetry, all words assembled in an effort to be poetic or prose are actually lines of music as well because of the nature of how they relate to each other. So oftentimes, like, I listen to you or I'll listen to, I'll read, for example, reading Saints in Love, I could hear your voice reading that because of your lyrical word choice so much that I... knowing your voice and knowing the, looking at the word choice, that I could hear the music of it, and that's unique to you. And I think what happens in the songs that I'm doing, because of my experience, because of the instrument I've been given, because of my particular limits or as an editor, they come out as they do, which is, very intentional towards talking about relational love, and not just romantic love between lovers,
right?
So love for my parents, love for my family, love for my community, love for my country, love for my God. And they also I actually have a song too that'll be on there, but is from a houseplant, but it's actually, it was a really pretty houseplant, but it's a metaphor for, it's called Black Eyed Susan, and it's a metaphor for just not taking care of something precious, and how it just dies. So in the songs, this particular collection of work is really focused on that, about when I teach songwriting, I think if anyone comes away with anything, I hope they get one thing, is to always identify where the love is in what they're writing. It's either absent or it's present. You can nail that down, you're pretty much going to be able to speak clearly in a song. You know, any song should be able to identify the absence or presence of love.
And it sounds as though Love Colored Glasses is partly your healed, sort of your healing journey through perhaps your own life, as well as a great gift and a blessing now to pass along to others as well. And how about one more word about blessing?
Okay.
As we come to the end.
Yes, about blessing.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, Kara. The questions are so spot on, because I've been really thinking about why now, why here, why these, why, the why's.
Yeah.
Because those particular things that brought me to the desert, have now been healed. The beauty is coming from the ashes, and God promises to restore what the locusts have eaten. I'm in a place of restoration in my life, And also, because of that, I have it's not an obligation, but I have a burning conviction to encourage others into their restoration, because even though I'm in a season of being restored, something else may happen. That's life. The other people need to be encouraged, because everyone's around us is going through something. Like you said, divorce, death, poverty, unemployment, uncertainty. There's all kinds of broken hearts around, and I'm in a season. I've been blessed to be a blessing. And when I talk about the Kickstarter project of Love Colored Glasses, my byline is, I cook, you eat, I sing, you enjoy, love wins. Because it really is a gauntlet challenge to myself to say, you know what, time to, I've dusted myself off, I've stood up, and those nooks and crannies that only God could reach and heal, now he's commissioning me to be that ambassador of his love and be that ambassador as a person and say, you know what, you're not alone in this. That if we're looking through the perspective of love colored glasses, that we're not alone in our journey. We're not alone in our devastation. We're not alone in our joy, you know? And so that is my hope, is that if I'm looking forward to experience what I've experienced in the concerts I've been able to give over the 9 years of this process of God working in my own heart, is seeing the things I worked out in each song and sing them for other people and getting to witness them be able to work out their stuff as we go on this journey together.
Yes.
And I'm hoping that will be the ultimate byproduct of Love Colored Glasses, was not only to go into the homes of people
and
fellowship with them and break bread with them, but also to be able to leave them this record that says to them, that brings to their mind constantly that they're not alone and that there is restoration on the other side.
And thank you right there. I love the phrase, love wins. It's a fantastic message, and it sounds like a great project. As we come to the end of the program, I just want to let listeners know that all your website contact information, the Kickstarter project information, will be posted on our homepage shortly, at GodspeedInstitute.com. And Mehman, I just wanted to thank you so much for being on the program today and sharing so much from the heart of your own journey as a living path of hope for so many of us.
Well, I got to tell you, Kara, you are such an inspiration. I am so honored, and you are a person who is blessed to be a blessing. That's exactly what you've been in my life. So it was a pleasure, and I thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
It's been great. Please stay in touch with more information about your music going forward. And today we're gonna actually play one of your songs as our going out music. This is called Wilderness. And I want to thank the listeners for joining us on the Godspeed Institute today. The program was recorded live on the Progressive Radio Network in New York City and produced by Michael Hallenbeck. If you would like to hear this or any of our previous programs again, or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com. And please send your comments to office@GodspeedInstitute.com. We always enjoy hearing from you. Join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems right here. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.